home to read them. In addition, I have a couple extras I'd like to read right now. Remember to bring your socks next week. If you're in the service on May 1st, you received a sock for the Hope Center's Sock It to Poverty fundraising campaign to fill with loose change. Please bring your full socks back next Sunday, May 22nd, and put them in the offertory basket. If you don't have a sock, you can still give donations to the Hope Center, which provides financial assistance, food, clothing, and child care to those in need in Waukesha County. Thank you for your generosity. I've got an announcement request from Esther Flakus. Thank you, Esther. Bravo. I should have mentioned as part of the Hope Center announcement earlier, the Cardboard City is also canceled for Friday, May 20th. For those interested in helping the local homeless population, though, you can contribute to the Hope Center via the Sock It to Poverty next weekend. I invite you to greet those around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign our guest ledger on the visitor's table out in the foyer. There are a variety of information available on the table about church and Unitarian Universalism. Please help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to speak with you about that. If you're visiting us with children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they can go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you'd like to go to along to observe the child's class, please do so. There's also a nursery just past, just out the doors and across the hall in the foyer to my right and across the entryway, rather. Classes will end promptly at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their class. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we'd be pleased if you'd introduce them, or if any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a great time to do so. We'd really like to get to know you. Welcome.
I saw that, and you said, "Oh no." There's someone that I work with. Her name is Diane, and her husband John are here as guests as well.
Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Our conversation corner is a good place to gather to further discuss the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. Hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today is Ray Gurney. Ray was raised a Lutheran, receiving his theological education at United Methodist Seminary in the Chicagoland area. He served in the parish ministry for a few years until he found his true calling in working with addicts and people with mental health disabilities, and found his way out of the parish ministry and into ministerial challenges in working with homeless men in Milwaukee. Since he retired 6 years ago, he has found new challenges with the Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Division, where he is the Spirituality Integration Coordinator. This means that his job is to coordinate all of the attempts to integrate spirituality into the treatment programs at the division. He maintains his ministerial credential with the Federation of Christian Ministries, an organization that practices freedom of thought, ministry, and worship for everyone. Almost makes one think of Unitarian Universalists. Thank you.
Our opening words are from the UUA Member Congregations Covenant. It's printed in the order of service. If you'd like to read along with me. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote a free and responsible for truth and meaning. For our chalice lighting response, please join in the choir in singing a congregational response in the order of service. The children of all ages would like to come up and join with Chris White for the story of the lady and the spider.
Good morning. One, two, three, four, five. Good morning. I think the bigger kids are off working on some projects, so. Why don't you guys scoot a little closer? Can you scoot a little closer to me? Because then I'm going to show you a few pictures. So scoot, scoot, scoot. Scoot, scoot, scoot. Okay, this is called The Lady and the Spider. It's kind of a spring story. On a summer day in the lady's garden, a spider stood on a lettuce leaf. I'm going to show you a few pictures, not all of them, but because they're pretty similar, but I'll show you a few as we go. She looked about and saw a hill of green and valleys of green. Between two leaves, she saw a green cave. Walking daintily on her eight legs, she went inside. With the tips of her long front legs, she felt the sides and the ceiling and the floor. The cave suited her. It was a leafy den, just the right size to be her home. When the night came, dew formed on the leaves. Drops of water trickled into the hollow between the spider's den. They made a tiny pool. The moon rose. Moths wakened and flew dizzily around the garden in search of other moths. One saw moonlight shine in the pool. It fell into the water. Its wings became wet. Unable to fly, it drowned. In the morning when the sun rose, the spider looked into the pool and saw a moth. She walked to the water's edge and had breakfast. Each day the lady came to tend her garden. She planted seeds and pulled up weeds and sprinkled water. She looked among the leaves for bugs. She did not want bugs to eat her garden. Once she saw the spider walking on a leaf but paid no heed. She knew spiders didn't eat lettuce. When the lady's footsteps shook the ground, the spider ran and hid. One day, the lady's dress brushed the leaves around the spider's home. The spider felt like an earthquake, but the lady did not know what she had done. For many days, the garden grew. The leaves grew bigger. Each day, the spider walked on the leaves searching for food. At noonday, when the sun was high, small flies, the kind with golden eyes, sat quietly on the leaves to warm their wings and rub their hands together. They were the spider's lunch. Birds also dined in the lady's garden. They perched on the fence and looked about sharply, peering here and there, searching for bugs. One day the spider, was having lunch. She was eating a large blue fly. Ooh, gross. A bird swooped down just in time. The spider saw its swift, dark shadow. She leaped into her den. The bird flew away with the fly. As the days grew hot, the lady knew it was time to pick the lettuce. Each day she came to the garden with a basket and a knife, and she cut off a head of lettuce for her lunch. Each day the lettuce that she picked was closer to the head of lettuce in which the spider lived. One day when the sun came up and warmed the walls of her den, the spider came out and walked down a green hill to her sparkling pond to see what would be there for breakfast. Just at that moment, the lady came down into the garden. She bent down, grasped the head of lettuce in which the spider lived, and cut it off at the roots. She shook off the dewdrops and put the lettuce in, with the spider hiding into among the leaves, into her basket. And of course, the lady had no idea that the spider was there. As the leaf beneath her feet shook, the spider dashed toward her den. But her den was gone. The lady's thumb had crushed it. The spider clung to the leaf while the whole green world trembled and shook around her. The lady carried the head of lettuce to her kitchen and laid it on the counter beside the sink. She's carrying that lettuce into the kitchen. When her world became still, the spider stood up and walked about among the leaves. She tried to see with her 8 eyes, and she tried to feel with the tips of her legs. She tried to think with her tiny brain. It was no use. The spider could not know that she had made her home in the head of lettuce in the lady's garden, and the lady intended to eat that lettuce for lunch. The lady bent over the sink, and she picked up the lettuce, and she parted the leaves, and she looked for bugs, but she didn't see the spider crouched deep in the dark crannies between 2 leaves. The lady put the lettuce in the sink, and she put in the stopper, and she turned on the water. It poured clean and cold over the leaves. Huge drops of water splashed around the spider. She was caught in an icy river. She lost her grip, and she spun into the stream and was carried down and then pushed up and down by the surging water. The lady turned off the faucet. The water in the sink became calm, and the head of lettuce floated, rocking on tiny waves. Part of it was underwater, and part of it was above. The spider struggled upward to the surface. Her front legs found the edge of a leaf. She was heavy with water. With all her strength, she pulled herself up onto a leafy island. The leaf was cold. It was wet. The spider walked about, waving her long front legs, searching for a dark, dry, safe place to hide. The lady looked down. What do you think she saw? And a tiny motion caught her eyes. She saw a small spider adrift on a raft of lettuce, trying to escape. The lady picked up the leaf, and with the spider clinging to it, and opened the lid of the garbage pail. Just before the leaf dropped off her fingers, a thought crossed her mind. She looked again at the spider searching for a place to hide. Waving her legs, she waved and waved and waved. Looking closely, the lady saw things she'd never noticed before. She saw how the spider's color matched the leaves. She saw the tiny dots that were her eyes, and she saw how delicately she moved with her slender legs and how she waved and waved and waved. The lady thought, isn't this wonderful that a creature so small can live and love life, find food, make a home, just like me? The lady closed the lid of the garbage pail, holding the leaf carefully with the spider on board. She went to the garden. She bent over a head of lettuce and gently dropped the spider onto the leaves. Good luck in your new home, said the lady, and she walked back to the kitchen for lunch. The spider landed lightly in the sun-warm, sweet-smelling valley. She sat still until she was very warm and dry. Then she walked up the green hill and down the green hill, searching with the tips of her long front legs. Soon she found a nook just the right size. There she waited, safe and snug, waited for lunch, for the sun to set and the moon to rise, for her new, tiny, very important life to go on. Thank you.
It's a good lesson for you kids. Don't kill spiders. They eat bugs. They're good. Please rise as you're willing and able and sing with us hymn number 1018, which should be in the little turquoise colored book. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and hope, for now we are the keepers of the dream. And if you are a visitor or a guest, we don't expect any donation from you. This is on us. Invited to share personal joys and sorrows with the church community at this time, so please be brief for all those who wish may share. If you will raise your hand, if you have a joy or concern, raise your hand, and usher will bring you a microphone. I will first light the main candle in consideration and concern for the victims of all the natural disasters been going on this spring. It's been such a turbulent spring with floods, tornadoes, and lots of loss of life and homes. Donations to the UUSC and to the UU Service Committee and to the American Red Cross are always welcome.
I have a joy. Today, May the 15th, is a memorable day. It marks 48 years that I have been married to this wonderful woman next to me, who was a child bride.
Hi, this is John. Would you please light a candle of joy and concern for my mom? A couple weeks ago, we got her moved into her new place, so that's the joy. The concern is that now she's having troubles with fractures in her vertebrae, and she's back in the hospital.
Would you light a candle of joy? This is it is a personal joy. I was here early to set up for the sharing the ministry we're having after the service, and I got to hear the choir practice, and you all got to hear it just once, but I got to hear it several times, and it just brought joy to my day. We're so blessed with the great music.
My name is Chris. Would you light a candle of joy for my daughter Stephanie? After 6 years, she defended her dissertation. She got her PhD in nursing. on Thursday. It was lots of ups and downs. She felt like she was on the roller coaster, and I felt like I was sitting behind her on the roller coaster, and it's tough for me because I get motion sickness. So it's been an exciting week for our family. Thank you.
Sonia, could you please light a candle of joy for having Sammy with us? We're really enjoying her, and she's been a great, joyful part of our family.
My name is Kirsten, and I would like you to light a candle of joy for my daughter, Claire. She not only graduated with a vet tech degree, but she got a job in her area.
Hi, I'm Betsy. Would you please light a candle of joy for I'm graduating from grad school next Sunday.
I'm Mary, and as long as we're doing joyful graduations, I'm graduating next Sunday also with my PhD in counseling psychology, and my dissertation won the Outstanding Dissertation Award.
My name is Jesse, and I have a joy for Jackson and Joshua's dad. It's his 32nd birthday.
I'm Tracy. I hate to spoil the fun. A candle of prayer, and my sister-in-law was diagnosed with breast cancer for the second time, so she'll be looking at some surgery coming up. To keep her in your thoughts. Thanks.
I have a concern that there's an article in yesterday's paper that We Energies is withdrawing financial support from renewable energies projects such as solar, and I don't know yet how that affects our project. I have a call in to our contractor, and I'll make more phone calls tomorrow and learn more. I don't think that it affects us, but with what's going on in Madison, more shoes can drop. Please join in our centering hymn number 1002 in the turquoise book. Please remain seated. Join in a minute of silent reflection. reading is Fire and Ice by Robert Frost. Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think I know of hate. To say that for destruction ice is also great and will suffice.
This is going to take two trips. I need to get the rest of my notes. This is the first part. Okay, we also have some quotations. For those of you that are not familiar with evangelical Christianity, you may not be aware of how important it is to document everything you believe from the Bible. So just because we're talking about the rapture, which comes out of evangelical Christianity, I thought I'd bring along a couple Bibles. This is a typical Christian Bible. If you've never seen one before, I know I'm talking to you, so I have to start sort of with the basics. This is a Hebrew Bible, and it's a Tanakh, if you're Jewish. And the rapture theology actually can be traced back to Judaism. And there is one little passage I want to read, but in case you ever are aware that when we say Bible, we really ought to be careful how we use that term, because it means different things in different religious traditions. Now, I'm going to have to jump around a little bit at the beginning here of my little talk, because the real heart of what we're going to do this morning in terms of our spiritual development or enlightenment is going to be in the Pali log. Have you ever been to church, like maybe not necessarily here, but somewhere, and after you leave, you says, you know, that was not a bad sermon, but I really got the most out of the Pali log? You know, that's happened to me a number of times. Like, you can doze through the sermon, but it's really hard to doze through the Pali log, right? Okay, so I want to share something. I'm going to jump around a little bit. First of all, this is going to be a lot about definitions today, and I'd like to start with the definition of sermon. Sermon is a religious discourse delivered as a part of a church service, often lengthy and tedious speech of reproof or exhortation. I go with the first part of that. I think that'll have to do. The next thing I'd like to jump, and I'm going to jump to a whole bunch of little things right now just to give some information and terminology for us to think about, and then we'll engage in a Pali log. And for those of you who do not know what a polylog is, think of what a monologue is. It's like I'm doing a monologue right now, right? Later on, we're going to do a polylog where everybody gets to participate. I think that's really neat. There's Karen. Was this last song we sang, Comfort Me, was that a brand new one for the congregation? A couple of times. Okay, so you're getting good at it now. Okay, that's what I thought, because in Revelation chapter 14, see, this is, if you would go to a fundamentalist or an evangelical Christian church, this is the way it would work. I hope you enjoy this, because it tells you in Revelation 14, well, there's a couple verses here. Let me just start reading a little bit, and you'll see. This proves, right here, Revelation, the last book of the Christian Bible, chapter 14, beginning at the first verse and just reading a few verses, this proves that only you's are going to be in heaven. Even if you don't believe there's a heaven, this proves that only you's are going to be in heaven. And here's what it says. Then I looked, and there was the Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him were 144,000. That's about all of the UU churches in the U.S., right? Who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. Well, we haven't quite gotten there yet. And I heard a voice from heaven like the sound of many waters, and like the sound of loud thunder. The voice I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps. Do we have any harpists in the congregation today? Okay, you're going to have to start practicing. We do. I thought you did. Who's your harpist? Where? Your daughter. Oh, okay. Well, that's covered. The voice I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps, and they sing a new song, like 348. It doesn't exactly say that, but it's a new song. And they sing this new song before the throne, and before the four living creatures, and before the elders. No one could learn that song except the 144,000 who have been redeemed from earth. Now that to me proves that only UUs are going to go to heaven. 144,000 UUs. Because of all of the churches, all of the congregations, all of the places that I visited, I have never heard anybody except UUs take on the most interesting and the most difficult new songs. Isn't that true? Isn't that true? So I just want you to know. Now, while we're back here in the book of Revelation, I want to mention that the book of Revelation, that word in English, comes from the Greek apocalypse. Are you familiar with that? That's all that Revelation means. It's singular. It's not plural. Revelation. Apocalypse in Greek just simply means revelation, something revealed. There is nothing special about this apocalypse, except it happens to be the last book in the Christian Bible. You know, Martin Luther, when he was doing his thing, the book of Revelation was one of the books he would be willing to throw out. He felt that it really was not inspired, and it did not have much of anything in there for anyone. But it's still in the Christian Bible, and it's used a lot because of its sort of mythological, supernatural, cosmic imagery. Now, I want to stop for a minute because it'd be real easy for me at this point in the sermon to kind of start scoffing at anyone who believes in the literal images, or that it might see the images in here as being literal. I don't want to do any of that scoffing, but I do want to raise up maybe the other side of the coin, and that is, how do we understand spirituality? Do we understand it through mathematical formula? What kind of language, what kind of communication do we understand spirituality? Is it not metaphorical? Indirect images rather than the concrete and the literal. So in that way, I like the book of Revelation because it brings a kind of new way of looking at spirituality. And it challenges us to look beyond the literal. So if we want to say that spirituality is not about obeying laws like the 613 laws in the Torah, we need to look at images that maybe are unfamiliar to us or uncomfortable to us. Now, the problem with the images in the book of Revelation is that they have come to be interpreted for us. People for about the last 200 years have been trying to tell us how to think about the images in the book of Revelation and other images that has to do with eschatology. And that's another term. And I'm sorry we have to do this. This is what makes the sermon boring, I guess, is all of these words. Eschatology is simply the technical term. It means, you know, the study of something. It's the study of, like, eschatons. It's the study of end times. This is true. This is true. You never can tell when I'm joking, though, can you? No. But this one is true. I actually had to pass a test on this once in theological seminary. But end times can mean different things for different people. For the early Christians at the time of Jesus, there were like two major groups. One believed that there were no end times as such. In other words, the end times have already arrived and gone. If the flood and Noah and the repopulating of the earth was an end times, they could see that as an end times. There were those at the time of Jesus, who was a Jew, of course, who were looking for another David who could put an end to the Roman occupation and reestablish the United Kingdom of the North and South. So that for them would have been an end of the Roman times and then the start of a new age. But Jesus and some of his followers saw him as another kind of David, or fulfilling another type of prophecy. And that comes out of the prophet Isaiah, but not the first Isaiah, more like the second Isaiah, where we talk about Jesus as the servant of all. Not the conquering hero, but the servant. So if Jesus were to sit at a table, what place would he take? This is a quiz. The head of the table? Pardon? He would take it as a guest. Okay? He would what? He would be a waiter, probably. Okay. Are you thinking of the washing of the feet thing that's done in some churches on Maundy Thursday? If you grew up Catholic, you may be familiar with that ritual. Okay, that's sort of the antithesis of the powerful Davidic type of new heaven and new earth that's going to come to pass. Well, that was what some people believed. Other people believed more out of the Ezekiel tradition, where there was going to be this mighty battle between good and evil. And eventually good was going to win, but a lot of people were going to suffer in the meantime. I think we even have some politicians who believe in that philosophy right now, right here in Wisconsin. And a lot of people are suffering in the meantime. But eventually, God is going to establish his kingdom upon this earth. But he doesn't need to destroy it in order to do that. But there's an image of a new heaven and new earth, but it's contained within existing history. The book of Daniel in the Old Testament, or in the Hebrew Bible, the book of Daniel talks about images too that are apocalyptic. And apocalyptic meaning just what's sort of the story of how all of this is going to unfold. So when we think of the word apocalypse, we think of this horrible battle or something. And sometimes we think this is going to take place in an Armageddon, which could be a place in Israel or a Palestine, or it could be a metaphorical Armageddon, or it could be horrible rains and tornadoes like we've never seen before, and earthquakes, Armageddon. So there's different ways that people interpret this. Now, as for me, I feel that Armageddon, as far as a major part of Christian theology, is really, really, really weak. And the reason I say that is that I don't believe Jesus ever talked about Armageddon. I think some of the core Jesus teachings are like about the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is what? The kingdom of heaven. You know, do they have to suffer through an Armageddon? No. Where is the kingdom? Jesus says the kingdom is in your midst. It's right here in front of you. Just simply live it. Live it out. Eileen and I happen to be taking a course in Buddhism. We've taken several courses together. And one thing our instructor reminds us of every now and then, there's a school of Buddhism that believes in instant enlightenment. Am I getting this right so far? Yeah? Okay. And you're not going to tell him if you're not going to tell Michael if I get it wrong, huh? No, it's our little secret. If they believe in instant enlightenment, and the problem for people is simply that they don't understand that that enlightenment is already within them. And it's just a matter of letting it be. Does that sound familiar to you, Yus? Yeah. So that's one school of Buddhism. There's another school that says you can't do it in this lifetime. If you're struggling for enlightenment in this lifetime and you're not a monk, a Buddhist monk, you're not going to get there. You got to go through monkhood first, which is good for the guys, but not so good for the women. So am I getting that right? Yep. Okay, good. Yeah, that's about all I learned from that class, I think so. But that really impressed me. And what we end up with here now in the rapture, which, by the way, is a word that is not even in the Bible. The closest we come to it is in the Latin translation of the Hebrew and Greek scriptures done by St. Jerome, if you're Catholic, just Jerry for the rest of us. In about the 5th century, and when he translated some things into Latin, he used a word that has come to be called rapture to us in the English-speaking world. And actually, that's one of those words that wouldn't have had to be translated at all unless we wanted to, you know, change the meaning. And that's kind of what's happened with a lot of this end times conversation, is common simple concepts that are in the Bible have been twisted and redefined, and we get some, I think, rather bizarre beliefs, such as Harold Camping's belief that May 21st, that's just a week from today? A week from yesterday. Oh, okay. If you've not sent in your pledge, please do real quickly. You're running out of time. Yeah. Harold Camping, by the way, he is now a retired civil engineer. His degree, he has a Bachelor of Science from a California university, I think Berkeley, but not during the 70s, more like during the 30s or 40s. He was born in 1921, I believe. He's about 90 right now. And Harold Camping has spent a lot of time and effort trying to come up with a timetable from the Bible. And in doing this, he has created a date that he believes the rapture is going to occur. Now, going back to the Latin and Jerome, the rapture in Latin simply means being caught up or being captured or being snatched up or something like that, or snatched away. It was at one time used to mean kidnapping. So that's the kind of image. So according to Camping, on May 21st, He doesn't say exactly when. The people that are believers in Jesus that are alive now, and those who are believers in Jesus who have died, first the dead will be raised and meet Jesus in the air, and then the believers who are still alive will be raised up in the air and meet Jesus and be taken off to a safe place. And on 5 months later, on October 21st, that's when the earth, the universe, and everything is going to be destroyed. Now that's camping. That's the background. Is there anything else? Let me check. Paul. Let me just mention, I have a thing about Paul, you know, from the Bible. I think it's really true that Paul is the real founder of Christianity. And a lot of Paul's beliefs, his biases, have been kind of pushed along in a way that I think are unduly... what's the word? It's really hard not to say he's really dumb. He really missed the image of a lot of teachings of Jesus. So I would say Paul got it wrong in a lot of ways, but you know, since it's here in the Bible, and for Christian fundamentalists, every single word is the inerrant truth, no error whatsoever. So trying to reconcile some of Paul's teachings to what I believe are the authentic teachings of Jesus, we have a lot of contrasts. And this is one big, big, huge area. Paul was really into eschatology and apocalypticism. Jesus was not. Okay. I think I've covered what I need to cover as background. Is that enough background? Okay. Polylog. Do you do the hand raising thing again? Yeah, if you raise your hand, and in Polylog, feel free to ask, comment, argue, debate. I mean, this is a free for all. And we have someone back here, we have somebody here, somebody there. Who do we start with? Eric?
I'm Eric. I think it's important. I wish that in our country we had sort of a vision or a storyline or a revelation of what it means to exist in our country and in the world, and sort of a common plot. Where is it we're going? And I think that that's one thing that Revelation maybe was intended to be is a here's, you know, an image, and I wish we had it. I think our founding fathers of our country really created a storyline, an image of what it means to be in an idealized society. And I think we've lost it, and I wish we could have that again.
Hi, I'm Julie. I just wanted to say, I'm over here. Just wanted to say I wish that, I know that the high schoolers are working on their stuff for next week, but I wish they had been able to be a part of this, because I think it was a really great discussion, and maybe they discussed that in their RE class, but because, you know, my daughter, who's a freshman in high school, will say things like, God, such terrible things are happening in the world. And I was reading her the story this morning in the journal of the people from Burma who are being resettled in Milwaukee and are living in these deplorable conditions. And you know, she has frequently said things like, you know, maybe 2012 is the end, because look at all these terrible things. And I don't know how to respond to that.
I think that's a great question to open up to everybody. I have an answer to that for myself, but I would like other people to comment on that too. What do we say to people who, how did you phrase it? That this is a lot of horrible things are happening, and what do we do? You know, what do we say to someone? Or what do we say to someone who is looking at us and saying, look, you're not a Christian, you're a UU. You don't believe in Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior, so when next week comes around, you know, you're going to be left behind. Like the Left Behind series. Do you know there were 16 books in the Left Behind series? Do you know how many they sold altogether? 65 million copies. Not only that, there's movie spin-offs. Did you know there's a video game called Left Behind that kids play? You don't know? Not the fog? Okay. Good for you. That's a blessing, believe me. Tom LaHaye, back in, I think, when did he start this? 1995 or something like that. He started writing books that borrowed images from the Book of Revelation as if it were really going to happen. And there was an Antichrist in his novels, and it's fiction. It's fiction. But it felt very real. And his books were written in a very staccato kind of format, kind of like an adventure, Tom Clancy style, goes to church, you know, or something like that. And a lot of people bought into it, and it helped them visualize some of the images in the Book of Revelation and out of Ezekiel, and it put all of the pieces together in such a way that a lot of people got to believe that, yes, these horrible catastrophes are going to happen. And on the day of the rapture, there are going to be pilots who are saved, who are going to be lifted out of their pilot seat in the airplane, and the airplane is going to crash with all of the passengers except those that are saved. And I heard something on public radio a couple weeks ago, a woman who really believes that May 21st is the rapture, and since she's saved, and since cats don't go to heaven, she needed to find an unsaved friend that she could trust that's going to take care of her cats until the cats die off. But she was serious about that, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, could you get unsaved? You know, is there a way to get unsaved? To say to God that I love my cat more than I love my own life. Now, I think that's a beautiful thing, personally. Okay, enough of me. We need a...
I was given the movie by my brother for Christmas one year. And I looked at it, and I didn't know what to do with it. First, I was going to, because I'm one that doesn't like to waste anything and recycles everything. So I thought, I'd give it to somebody who actually believes this way and let them use. And then I thought, wait a minute, you're perpetuating it. And I just dumped it in the garbage, you know. But the thing that's so weird, they profess to love, and yet they're working towards this so-called Armageddon. They're saying, like my brother will say to me, well, you know, it's the end times, these horrible things that are going on, and it has nothing to do with me or my burning all this gasoline, and I should be allowed to do whatever I want. That's why I live in this country, and gives me this, you know, line of what, yes. It's so difficult, because I look at him and I say, you're supposed to love your neighbor. That's the first law. And he says, I do. And I said, that immigrant is your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, then he starts to yell, of course. And but at any rate, it's difficult to deal with. I also had my granddaughter. She saw something 2012 or something, you know, and so I said, well, just start looking into it and researching. And then she found something when she, in her research, she told me, she called me in Florida. She said, I was kind of freaked out. I said, well, go do some research and I think you'll see what's happening. Well, then she learned about the fault that's going up into Chicago, etc. And then she read about one of the parks where the volcanoes are that's going to blow up and lose a third of the country. She said, no, I'm really freaked out. I'm not researching anymore. How do you deal with the children?
Yeah. From my point of view, it has to do with partly has to do with our psychological makeup. Part of it has to do with our culture. Where's our PhD in? Okay, I was listening, wasn't I? Isn't it true that our psychological makeup is such that we have a need to kind of fill in gaps to make sense of things? Oh, and that's the part of the answer. I think part of the answer is that we tend to, and say that again. We tend to remember or identify more with those facts of where we already believe or feel the emotional need to believe or would like to believe or other people force us to believe. Or so even you use? Oh, no. I don't know about that. Yeah. So, but this is a real problem.
My name is Jessie, and I just wanted to say a couple things. I recently saw something on the internet called The Myth of Religion, Part 1, 2, and 3. And it talked a lot about religion, the history of it coming out of people watching the stars at night and taking these constellations and making stories out of them that made sense to them, where they were at their time, their place, what plants they were trying to grow, what animals they were trying to hunt. All these stories mm-hmm. get blended in with the people who are making up the story from where they are at their place and time. And it makes sense to me, if you go to lots of different places around the world, there's going to be lots of different stories. And for one story to be the right one seems to be wrong to me, and that's probably why I'm a UU. Because what I love is we celebrate all stories here, even the fantastic ones, because they're fantastic and exciting. I'm not making plans for my cat, and if the rapture comes, can I have your car? That one. But I just wanted to say, if you haven't seen that, it's something that I wish I could have, you know, forwarded to everybody in my life who's tried to save me, you know. And I guess I just feel like I belong to many more possibilities if I don't just believe mm-hmm. one thing.
Yeah, I think one of the things that when people want to save us, they really truly do believe they're acting in our best interest. They want a good thing for us. But if that's not the good thing we want for ourselves, then what? Do we hurt their feelings? In Judaism, there's a concept of doing right, doing wrong, and then not harming others. In Buddhism, don't harm others. You know what I mean? John?
Yeah, it's interesting because I saw a thing that one of these rapturists last week was saying, oh, well, we have had so many earthquakes and there's so many wars going on that shows that that the rapture is indeed coming. And the author of this article on the internet went to factcheck.org and talked to a geologist, and he said, well, in fact, no, there's no more earthquakes going on now than at any other time, not even major earthquakes, and in fact, there's fewer armed conflicts now throughout the world than we've seen in the past. So I think people paint these pictures because they want to paint them, but when you start digging into it and finding out what's really going on, and you mentioned the 24/7 news cycle and all that, it's sort of sensationalism getting everybody, you know, excited and so forth. So I just don't buy it.
You, John, you used a term there that I'm not familiar with recently. It's called fact checking. I don't hear much of that going on anymore. But yes, absolutely. Nancy?
A couple things. You know, Victoria's Secrets sells a cologne called Rapture, and so think about that one. For those of you who used to go to West and knew Gary Zubin, you might be really interested that two nights before he passed away, another former UU had become an evangelical Christian, and she came into Gary's room and she said to me, "Nancy, I'm here to save Gary. He needs a rapture. He needs to be saved by me, otherwise he's not going to go to heaven. And he's got to be a Christian." And so I said, "So-and-so, let's go talk in another room. Gary might be in a coma, but I'm not so sure that he's not hearing you because he's stirring. I think we need to talk elsewhere." So as she preached to me about what we had to do to save Gary, I said, "I hate to tell you, but he's already saved." And she's, "Now, how can you say that as a UU?" I said, "Really, Lee, he was always a good person. He did a whole lot of things that might not seem religious in your definition, but they were religious in his. And isn't that what really matters?" And she stormed out.
I have a real quick quiz. It's an open flyer quiz. According to Harold Camping, what percent of the world's population is going to be saved, raptured? 3%. Why does God love those 3% more than any others? Okay, we have time for
One last question.
One last. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you think of the Shakers were really founded too with the belief that Jesus is going to come back really soon. And the reason for them not marrying and just having separate male and female is that it wasn't necessary to have children or have marriage because Jesus was going to return any minute. I want to thank everybody for participating and staying awake. And
please join us for coffee and conversation after the service. I'm sure that Ray will be most happy to entertain further questions and comments. Our closing words, go your ways knowing not the answers to all things, yet seeking always the answer to one more thing than you know. Let's go in peace. We're going to skip the hymn. I think it's fine. Well, everybody want the hymn? That sounds like by popular demand. We have a hymn number 348. Okay. Thank you. me. Go in peace.